Hey guys, I'm happy to announce a partnership with Reformation Heritage Books. Do you want to start reading the Puritans but just don't know where to begin? Puritan Treasures for Today from Reformation Heritage Books makes the riches of these godly writers of old accessible for the modern reader. With updated language and helpful instructions, these classic works from John Owen, Jeremiah Burroughs, and more are the perfect starting point for the curious reader. Learn more about the Puritan Treasures for Today at heritagebooks.org/puritantreasures. Use coupon code SHEPHERDS for 10% off your order. That's heritagebooks.org/puritantreasures. Coupon code SHEPHERDS. Welcome to the Shepherd's Crook Podcast. This ministry exists to provide coaching, resources, and events for pastors and church members. My name is Jared Sparks. Join me as I talk pastoral ministry, applied theology like manhood and womanhood, political theology, and cultural analysis with a little bit of hunting and fishing thrown in. I'm a husband, a father, and a pastor, and I'm here to remind you of the chief pastor and our King, Jesus. Welcome back to the show. I hope you guys are having a great day today. You're going to have to deal with a little bit of kind of a voice strain today. My voice is a little under the weather. This winter has not been like last winter, thank God. I've not been sick for the last 2 months, but you caught me on a day where my voice is a little bit struggling. I'm on the back end of actually getting better, but my voice sounds pretty bad. So yeah, deal with it. I think you guys will be able to handle it. Today, I'm pretty excited to be talking to a friend that I've been learning a lot from. And then also he's been just helping me with just life and getting strong. I'm talking to my good buddy, Matt Reynolds. Matt, how's it going, man?
Good, man. Thanks for having me on the show. It's always an honor to talk to you and have a great conversation.
Good deal. Well, we go ahead and pray. We're going to get into your book, but we're going to talk about a little bit, just some strength training on the front end, and then we'll get into undoing urgency. But let's go ahead and pray.
Yeah.
Father, we just thank you for this time. Thank you for a brother and a friend, and just appreciate his investment in me. And I've been just able to learn so much. I thank you for that. I thank you for everybody else that's learning right now, even through just the wide publication of his new work. And I just ask that it would have real life effect in the life of people who have tried to just frantically get handles on how to live life, what to do next, how to get my priorities in order, and then how to get some sort of a plan to make sure I'm doing the right thing and the most important thing. And so just the real nitty gritty details of life, God, I pray this book would have a real effect, and pastors and just men everywhere who are trying to get handles on it just in their life, and the ladies as well that may read it as well. And we just trust you're going to lead this conversation, and thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
All right, so we were kind of joking beforehand, but I've been the easiest person to train, I think, that maybe you've ever trained when it comes to my form and all of that. So, man, I appreciate you. Let's just talk about how amazing my form's been over the last 8 months or so.
You're not probably a genetically gifted athlete, I'll say that. but, you know, you've made some major progress really even recently, the last couple months. I think things are really lining out for you. And so, yeah, I mean, I think anybody that comes in and hasn't done this in the past, especially if you were doing a lot of running and you were a fairly active guy. But that distance running that can wreak havoc on your joints, on your knees, on your hips, on your ankles, on your back. And it's also catabolic. I mean, it burns muscle. And so you got to be very careful and try to find the right balance between strength training and gaining muscle versus the certainly the long form conditioning. And so, you know, I think anybody, when you're doing this and it's a new thing for you and you might have frustrations with form, I think often the client thinks like, oh, the coach is super frustrated with me as well. And the reality is for the most part, I've coached so many thousands of people that I've seen everything there is to see and anything that can be sort of messed up. And so, you know, my only, I gave you a hard time. I know I made a post one time on Twitter where I gave you a hard time about your press, I think it was, and facing the wrong way. And I think my only frustration sometimes with clients, and you certainly would fall into this in the early days, was, you know, there's times when you'll give somebody a form correction on the main lifts. We focus on the main lifts, the squat and the deadlift and the bench press and the press and things like chin-ups or pull-ups. And so it's really basic, simple stuff, but hard. You know, simple and hard are the most effective. And there's times when you give form critique and you can tell the client is doing the best they can to follow that and to try to do better. And it's just not always easy, obviously. It comes hard. And then there's other times that you'll give some sort of critique, and it was like they just didn't listen to you. You know, so I remember the thing I gave you a hard time was I was like, turn around in the squat rack. Like, quit facing this direction. Uh-huh. You're facing the wrong way. You're walking out with the bar forward, and then you're having to walk backwards to put the bar back in after you're fatigued, after you're tired. So turn around, you know. And then it was like three or four times in a row you didn't do it. I'm like, Jared, are you listening to my, are you watching my videos? Or, you know, I have people that we overhead press with a pretty narrow grip. And the reason we do that is because if you take a wide grip, it can be really hard on your rotator cuff, it sort of impinges your upper arm against that bump on your shoulder. What's the acromion? It's the head of the humerus into the acromion. And so you can tell somebody like, hey, take a closer grip, put your index fingers right where the neural starts. And then the next video they post, you didn't do this, but the next video they post, their grip is still wide. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, now listen, you're just not paying attention at this point. Like, you know, so recognizing the difference as a coach between what can just easily be fixed and they're just forgetting or not going back and reviewing the video, or, you know, they're just head is in another place. Those things can be frustrating sometimes, versus what I have to fight more often is, you know, somebody like, for example, when you deadlift, you still struggle a little bit with setting your back really flat on a deadlift, but I can tell you're trying to set the back on the deadlift. So I don't get frustrated very often. So occasionally you'll set it perfect for two or three reps, and then you sort of get a little bit lazy and you're like, I just want to get the set over with, and you kind of tell you pull with a rounded back. But when somebody's trying to do the thing you told them to do, then I'm never going to get frustrated with them. That's what, you know, 25 years of coaching has been able to add so many tools to my toolbox that if this cue doesn't work and we try it once or twice, then I can change to a different cue that still accomplishes the same thing. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I think there are a lot of parallels, I'm sure, to being a pastor and things that you pastor your flock, and there's times that you tell somebody there's something they're struggling with, a sin or a conviction or whatever the thing is, and you can tell they're really trying to do the right thing and accomplish the goal, and it's not really just white knuckle discipline. They really want to fall more in love with Jesus, and they still mm-hmm. struggle sometimes, because we do, and I think there's a lot more grace there. And then there's times when you just, I'm sure, tell somebody that you're pastoring, like, hey, just do this. This is a simple first step, and they just don't do it. And then yeah. you're like, now that's a lot more frustrating, because this is the thing that I know that you can do. And so, yeah, I think, you know, certainly I don't necessarily want to compare strength coaching to being a pastor, but on some level, it's all a version of teaching. Like, we're teaching.
Right.
And so, you know, that concept of teaching somebody, you know, even all through elementary and high school and whatnot, is you're really trying to teach them just above their level of knowledge. You're trying to take them out of their comfort zone just a little bit, 5%, mm-hmm. 10%. You can't, okay. you know, if your best squat is 200 pounds and I decide to throw 400 pounds on the bar, that's going to be real devastating to you. And so that's why we just add like 5 pounds to the bar, and you teach them just a little bit, and you make them have to work a little bit to get to that next tier. And it's, I think, the same thing whether you're teaching theology or whether you're teaching, you know, anything in the educational realm, whether that's science or math or whatever, you're always kind of moving to the next step. And so you can't go from simple addition and subtraction and multiplication and division to calculus.
Yeah, right.
So that's too much of a jump. And so that's really where the concepts of minimum effective dose that we use in strength training, we talk about it in the book, of that concept of everyone understands the concept of minimum effective dose when they think about medicine. So, you know, if I have a headache and one or two ibuprofen will knock out the headache, I don't need to take six. Mm-hmm. Sometimes yeah. we do. But the reality is, what I want to do is take the minimum effective dose for the maximum return on investment. And so if one ibuprofen sort of takes the edge off the headache, but doesn't really make the headache go away, I probably should have taken two or three or whatever the thing is. And strength training is the exact same thing. And I think often, you know, Paul, as he talks about, I mean, we often in our early Christian days, we're feeding on milk and not, you know, it's this almost this idea of like mama bird feeding baby bird, mm-hmm. Although they don't feed milk. But, you know, and eventually the goal is to get to where we can eat meat. Yeah. And but you can't take a brand new Christian and you know, start putting ribeyes down their throat, ribeyes
Yeah, that's right.
and the theological world down their throat. And so and I think often, you know, some of the biggest arguments that we get into, and especially in the Reform community, are some of those, you know, really big, deep ideas that so many people don't even have the foundations of the faith figured out. And so I think it's really important for us to both in our pastoring of people and discipling people to really focus on the foundational things that again are simple but not easy. And strength training is the same thing. We want to start very simple, and
that's right.
I think complexity is seductive for people. And so especially if you are gung-ho in whether that's strength training, obviously, you know, CrossFit has a reputation for this sort of thing. People get all in and they tell everybody about CrossFit. But I think the same, you get the same sort of thing in sort of cage stage Calvinist or Reformed community where they're like all in and they're pushing into the deepest realm of theology and doctrine. And it's like, hold on a second. Let's make sure that we have the foundation figured out.
Yeah, that's good.
And so I think there's some real crossover there between
absolutely
those.
Yeah, absolutely. Consistency, work over time, process, certainly things that are interchangeable there. So it's interesting. I'm pretty sober-minded at this point about my athletic or lack thereof ability, but the funny thing is, Matt, I played every sport growing up and everything came to me so naturally with sports.
Sure.
I didn't play college sports, but I played high school basketball at a larger school, and you know, I could take one step. I'm 5'10", could take one step, jump, hang the rim two-handed. But what I've noticed even from that stage of my life, throughout the year, my body, through playing sports, you would think that you would get stronger throughout the basketball season, that you'd be able to jump higher, your muscles would adapt, you'd be able to get stronger through the year. I actually began, even at a, you know, 16 to 18 years old playing just high school basketball, my body actually struggled through that where the end
yeah,
of the
degraded.
Year, it degraded. So the end of the year, I could barely touch the rim. At the beginning of the year, I could grab the rim and almost like just teetering on the edge of being able to dunk.
Sure.
I could always jump pretty good and move pretty good. But at the end of the year, just was broken down and beat up. It feels like, and this is kind of just live conversation here that we haven't even had, with my working out process over the last couple of years and beginning to train with you, it's been weird because I've gone, as I changed my form, I've taken steps backward to be able to get my form down correctly,
sure,
then began to build back up. But then also I've hit plateaus, but then like right now at this particular moment, the only thing that feels like I'm getting stronger in is my squats. Like I feel like my squats are going a little bit better. So with somebody like myself, I'm like 41, I feel frustrated at times that I'm not flying past, you know, my PRs and getting past getting to where I want to be and doing all this. And yet I'm super committed to this process of wanting to just, I'm going to, even if I'm at my max, hopefully I'm not at my max, you know, genetic potential.
No, sure.
But what is it? Why is it that there's these plateaus, you know, that feels like I'm at it a very long time. And then another moment I'm feeling like I'm getting stronger with squats. How does, you know, for the guy that's out there that's just hitting those plateaus, how do you stay motivated to bust through those?
Well, and first off, the reason that happens, I think, is because we can think of the physical body as the energy that it uses is much like a budget, just in the same way that you would budget your money. So you've got a finite amount of, if you've got $100 to spend, you have to decide how to divvy up that money over groceries and electric bills and whatever the thing is. And when the money is out, the money's out, and you can't go spend money on something that, you know, don't have money for anymore. And so in the physical realm, obviously when we're in our, you know, late teens and early 20s, and we're just like walking bottles of testosterone and you basically can't do anything to overtrain, that your quote unquote budget is actually much higher than it is when you're in your 40s. In your 40s, you really have to be careful to try to walk the balance of the strength training, which we know the strength training itself is not the thing that makes you stronger. It's the thing that takes you out of your comfort zone, beats you up, takes your muscles to a place that they've never gone before. Then the adaptation response is the thing that allows you to get stronger so that you're better able to handle that weight the next time you do it. And so, but if at the same time, you're also doing, you know, high amounts of cardio, you're running, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 miles a day or multiple times a week, or if you just have stress in your life in general, and who doesn't have stress in their life in general, but if it's exceptional levels of stress, you're very stressed about work or church or family or marriage or whatever those things are, your body handles stress the same way, whether that's like intense mental stress, we all know that when we handle intense mental stress, it affects our physical body. You know, you think about the quotes from David, like, you know, after he sinned with Bathsheba, it's like he was wasting away in his bone, you know, his skin and bones. And so there was a real physical effect to the sin that he had. And certainly I'm not comparing like your struggles or plateaus with David-like sin, but the idea there is that there is a level of stress that when you pay that budget and you have to pay for that level of stress, that means you have to reduce the amount of stress that you can do in the weight room. The other thing that you can do, there are lots of things that people talk about from a recovery perspective. You know, you can sauna and you can cold plunge and you can, and I love those. I have all those things. I love them. They make me feel good. But the only thing that's really been proven to dramatically improve recovery is sleep and food. Sleep and food. And so the first thing I would do with a lot of guys that are in their, you know, middle age and they're in their 40s, let's say, is to make sure they're getting enough calories. And specifically, we're talking about high quality calories, specifically protein. You know, 200 grams of protein a day is kind of tough to get, especially if you don't drink a protein shake or two a day. It's difficult. It's not hard to get 200 grams of protein in a day, but it is difficult to get 200 grams of protein every day for 4 weeks straight. And so it's also very difficult in the day and age that we live, and this will tie in nicely with the book, of we drown in urgency and we drown in stress. And so often the sleep is disrupted. And so if we can get good sleep and good food, and you definitely, I think I've said this in the past, you don't strike me as somebody who's got low testosterone. I think your hormonal milieu is probably perfectly fine. If you're somebody who's, you know, you are chronically are walking around with low testosterone, then that's something that you also can get fixed by a doctor as well. And so those are really the things. I guess that other piece is the hormonal piece is the other thing that can really improve recovery. And so for you, what we see is you're the type of guy that, as long as you're consistent, everybody goes through, it's everybody wants the progress to be linear up and to the right in just like in a straight line. But just like anything else, it's not. It's a lot of ups and downs. And so you have to look at trend lines over the month or over the quarter or over the year and see that you're getting better over time. And some for you, even right now, is you're hitting numbers that you hit several months ago, but you're now hitting them with way better form, with way better speed. You know, the bar is moving better, quicker, faster, more explosiveness. And so I can see that you're right on the cusp. Like certainly on squats, you're crushing PRs. You're at a point where if you can continue to learn how to hold your back flat on the deadlift PRs are coming. And I think really the press and the bench press to me, for you, is going to be really a factor of you need to put on 5 or 10 pounds of body weight, which means you got to get some more calories in and, you know, preferably not from junk and preferably mostly from protein. And I think as you do that and you're able to build up more contractile tissue in your pecs and arms and whatnot, it also cuts down on the range of motion. You think about somebody with a big barrel chest, they don't have to move the bar as far. And so the total work is actually lower. And so, but it's just part of it again is you go through this process in strength training. And I think this is the same for any sort of, you know, spiritual disciplines or family worship or whatever the thing is, that you often have to start with discipline. You just have to be disciplined and do the thing. Like maybe you don't want to train. Most people don't want to train in the beginning and you feel terrible. And if you haven't trained either ever, it's been 20 years or whatever, since you were in high school or college, you just got to do that white knuckle discipline. But this is where somebody like me and maybe Jocko would disagree, is what happens after that. And so, you know, Jocko's always talking about discipline equals freedom or discipline over motivation or whatever that thing is. And what I have found in the, again, over 20, 25 years of coaching many thousands of people, is that if you do the thing that you don't want to do, that requires some white knuckle discipline in the beginning, but you're doing it for the right reason and you know it's good for you, you know it's healthy for you, you know that there are benefits for it, very quickly, usually within 2 weeks or so, 2 to 3 weeks, that discipline turns into motivation.
Okay.
So now it really doesn't feel like discipline anymore. It feels like I'm motivated to do the thing. Mm-hmm. And then if you continue to ride motivation very well and you continue to like know that motivation is not is also sort of fleeting as and isn't going to last. But if you push very hard during that motivational phase, you stay super consistent. And so when I say push hard, I don't mean load more weight onto the bar than you should. I just mean show up every day. Like you're a blue collar worker, punch in, punch out, you know, punch that time clock and get the work done. Then what you'll find is then after a few months, it's no longer discipline or motivation. It's habit.
Yeah, that's
and it's the same. It's the same thing with spiritual disciplines. It's the same thing with family worship. It's the, you know, getting that thing started and changing momentum is often the most difficult part. And so as you change the momentum, you immediately start to feel better. Like obviously in 2 weeks of training, you're not going to look really any different, but you often feel much better. And then that turns into motivation or, you know, the impact that you see in your daily spiritual disciplines or your family worship or whatever that is, same sort of thing. You start to feel this difference in your family, in your spiritual walk with the Lord, and that turns into motivation. And then eventually the goal is to have that turn into habit. And so it's just part of who you are. Training, spiritual disciplines, family worship, whatever the thing is, those things become just part of who you are, like brushing your teeth in the morning, or take a shower, or tying your shoes. And so I think that there's really a three-step process. And often that process has to get restarted again. Like something will happen in the midst of the habit or the midst of the motivation. Maybe you go on vacation. Maybe somebody gets sick. Maybe kids get sick and you miss a week of training or you miss, you know, a week or two of whatever the thing is that you want to do. Well, you kind of have to go back and start at the discipline phase again and let it turn into motivation. But eventually it becomes habit and becomes part of who you are.
That's helpful. I've for years said that it requires no discipline for me to run. I started running when I was about 18 or 19. And now it's just, I'm only running about one day a week because of what I'm doing with strength training. But running has never been a discipline for me. It's just, I just run. I enjoy it. I like it. But I always said that lifting weights, getting to the gym required discipline, and I never had those habits in place. And then eventually over the last couple of years, I did get those things in place. And now for me, it's different than just the discipline. It does require me, okay, I'm going to go. It's cold. The gym that I work out at is a garage. It's cold there. And the timeline now of how I work out, I actually have to work out with my kids. You see my kids every once in a while in it.
Yeah.
Because of our school schedule and how we work it, where I have the kids for that morning time where Jordan is finishing up doing school with the other kids. And so I've always got one or two children with me when I'm at the gym and it's freezing cold. So it does require that, but it's not the same kind of thing as it was 3 or 4 years ago. Now it's just kind of like the running. It's just what I do now at this point. And I enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I really enjoyed, even after doing it for, you know, since the mid-90s, I really enjoy training. But I really don't enjoy getting ready to train. And it's not like there's a, you know, I don't have any hair. I'm not like, it's not like, and I've got a home gym, so I don't even have to drive anywhere. But there's still this thing for me that's like, all right, like I need to stop working, stop doing it. And I need to take my time and focus and get into the gym and actually train. Once I get into the gym and I start training, I feel great. And after I train, I really feel great. And I often finish training up and I train pretty fast at this point. Again, I'm busy CEO. And so most of my training sessions are like 40 minutes or less. I just get in and hammer it and do really short rest periods. And then I have a bathroom in my home. And I'll go in the bathroom. I'll put on my swimming trunks and I'll walk right out the door from my gym and get in the sauna. And I sit in the sauna and sweat. Then I go cold plunge. By the time I've trained and done sauna and potentially cold plunge, the whole thing's been an hour. And I feel like a completely different person. And for me, the way I do that, and this, I think there's lots of ways to skin a cat here. People always ask me, like, what time of day should I train? And I say, whatever time you're actually going to do it, you know, for people who hate waking up early in the morning, you can try to do that. But if you, you know, 2 months in, you can't stand waking up at 5:30 in the morning, it's probably not going to be sustainable. For me, I get up very early and I'd work and I'd do my urgent work, which again, we'll talk about with the book. I knock out the urgent and important work first, because it hangs over my head. And so I often sometimes I read my Bible when I first wake up, but I'm, you know, I wake up at 3:30, 4 in the morning and I'm groggy just like anybody else is. It's just what time I wake up. I don't set my alarm. And so there are emails I can answer and Basecamp notifications and things I can do that kind of wake me up. I do online coaching. You know, I'm, a lot of times we'll have broken down your videos by the time you wake up the next morning. And I can do an hour or so of kind of urgent and important work, online coaching, answering emails, project management stuff. And then my brain is awake enough. I've had a cup of coffee or two. Then I can do my spiritual disciplines. And then I take that break and I train with my wife. We train together, which I really enjoy, and do that for about an hour. And then when I come back in, then I can focus on the things that are very important to me, mm-hmm. not just the things that are urgent. And so during the day, that looks like the important things in the business, like what a CEO, only a CEO can do. And if I do that well, by the time I get to my afternoons and my evenings, then I get to focus on the important things that are not urgent at all, which are the good quality time with my family, with my, you know, with my wife and with my children, and cooking dinner together, which we love to do, family worship, those sort of things. And so that's how it works for me on a daily schedule. And it's less about the time, or like the literal, you know, it's not like I start work at 4 a.m. every single day. I just don't set an alarm. Whatever time I wake up, I just happen to wake up early. But then I have that routine. Go downstairs, make the coffee, take the dog out, and, you know, get started on my day. And that routine makes it so that it feels like I end up having this transition period with my training, which I train 7:30 in the morning. And I've already worked, you know, for 3 hours a lot of times and done my spiritual disciplines. Then that training time becomes the transition period between urgent Matt and important Matt.
Yeah. Okay.
That's kind of how I work that out.
It's good. Well, let's go ahead and transition then into some of that content that you just laid out. And I'm going to really relate this to pastoral ministry, but this is applicable to everybody. And I trust that the listener here is smart enough to kind of take these bits of information and apply it to their own life, because I think it is practical in everybody's life to be able to figure out what's important, how to prioritize, how to get things done. So the book is Undoing Urgency. It was published by Forbes. Phenomenal book. It's in three parts. First part is just laying out what is he talking about with undoing urgency. And then part two is laying out of the game plan of really getting handles on just life and goals. And I'll let you lay out that acronym and that content here in a minute. And then the last part, part three, is basically just executing the game plan with the metrics.
In the trenches.
In the trenches of moving from, we've got the game plan, but now is it actually getting done? Those pieces and elements that go into actually moving from here's the idea to here's the plan. And it's interesting, Matt, because there's some people that are really good with the big idea, big picture stuff. And it seems like you're, you know, in the grid of pastors, we'll often talk about these archetypes in the Old Testament of prophet, priest, king. And and it's been thrown around quite a bit. And it seems like you have some of these elements of you know, prophet, but really these kingly abilities of just thinking through organizations and structures and all of that. And then, you know, for folks that are just kind of either the prophetic type or the priestly type, they can get bogged down. The prophetic type gets bogged down in, you know, I've got this idea of part two of the book, the game plan, but the execution part of the X's and O's and the details, it just never actually gets done because I'm always, you know, in that dreaming stage or thinking through the big picture stuff, but never actually getting to it. And then also getting bogged down with the urgent and unimportant stuff. But then the priestly side also is like, wait, what's this game plan thing? I'm just taking care of people here. And that's always frantically running around with her hair on fire onto the next person that they need to visit or take care of or whatever it may be. And so why don't you go ahead and just lay out the book, Dan, and let's just talk through, because I think the real practicals of undoing and just thinking through what's the unimportant and what is the urgent and unimportant stuff that bogs us down. It's not even the urgent and important. It's the urgent and unimportant. And then let's just walk through the big three ideas of the book.
Yeah,
and then
for
just
sure.
Kind of whet people's appetite to go out and buy it.
Yeah, so I think I won't spend a lot of time on, but it is really important in the book, early on in the book, is to really truly hone in on your core values. What are your core values? If you don't know what those are, and you know, I would hope almost everybody listening to this podcast, we're going to have similar core values. Obviously, in the book, the book's written and published by Forbes. I know not everybody's going to have core values like me. I do list my core values in here. I look at the attributes that I respect and that I value, and things like, you know, taking responsibility and initiative and serving others gladly and those sort of things. And I lay out those attributes, or I did that over the course of several weeks. And then you'll start to see pattern recognition between those attributes that you respect, that you desire, that you want to be, that you are naturally, And you can really hone down to about three primary core values in your life and then define those as well. Now, this matters because when it comes time to set the goals for, and it's not for your life necessarily as a whole, it's often those core values, they're the things that are the driving force behind really everything you do in life for your entire life. The goals that you're setting are often by season or by year. And so you look at what are the most important things that I need to accomplish in these various aspects of my life that are in alignment with my core values. And so that comes to the discussion of the urgent versus the important. And so Charles Hummel wrote a book, I think in the 30s, he said, the urgent is the enemy of the important. And then Eisenhower said, I have two types of problems that I deal with on a daily basis. The urgent problems, which are never important or almost never important, and the important problems, which are almost never urgent. And so from that, he did not coin the phrase, the Eisenhower matrix, but we talk about this a lot in the book. I think it was originally talked about in Stephen Covey's Seven Habits of Highly Effective People book. Brett McKay from Art of Manliness has written on this. And I really started to apply this to my life, my personal life, my the way I strength coach, and then, of course, my business as I grow my business. In any, if we take any list of tasks, so one of the first things I would do, and I have people do in the book, is to take a time audit. They spend a week or so literally auditing every minute of every day. And so you do it in maybe 15-minute chunks or 30-minute chunks. What did you actually spend time on? Which means if you spent 15 or 30 minutes doom scrolling Twitter, then that gets put on, right? You write that stuff down. And then once you have this really complete list of all the tasks that you do on a daily or weekly or even a monthly basis, you can start to assign all of those tasks into one of the major four quadrants of what we call the Eisenhower matrix. And the first quadrant are the things that are not urgent, not important. And these are things that should just be purged from your life. And so these things are not always immoral. Sometimes they're amoral, but you know, it's just things like doom scrolling social media, or it's binge watching Netflix, or it's you know, playing fantasy football, or it's internet porn that very much is immoral. Like, these things that are just time wasters and bring no value to your life, you should purge them from your life, especially if you're somebody who's really trying to accomplish things and trying to move the ball down the field, whether that's for your family, you're playing the long game. Again, I like having this audience because I think we're all probably thinking that direction. I'm not just thinking about what I can accomplish in my life, but I'm thinking about my children and my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren who don't exist yet. You know, I have kids, but no grandkids and great-grandkids and great-great-grandkids. And so the things that don't have any value addition to my life, I try to purge those entirely from my life. And so that's very easy to get caught up in. Just again, doom scrolling social media, getting caught up with notifications on your phone, whatever that thing is. And so we want to purge those things. Then you have the things that are urgent and unimportant, which you mentioned. And the urgent and unimportant things are things like they often have a deadline. So it might be like I live in an HOA neighborhood, and if my lawn isn't mowed every week, then I'm going to get a letter from the HOA. I'm going to get in trouble. I might get fined. And so there's some urgency to mowing the lawn, but like really how important is mowing the lawn? Right. Or even today, my housekeeper is actually here right now working. And so, you know, housework, you know, we keep a clean house. We like cooking together, but we don't want to clean the floors and the baseboards all the time. And so figuring out what those things are, it's those distractions, those phone calls that you don't really want to have to take. They're not important, but the phone is ringing and you have to answer it. It's that kind of stuff. It's the email distractions. It's the stuff you're like, I don't really want to have to take the time to do this thing because it's not really important to me. But there is some urgency. There's a deadline maybe attached to it. And those things we want to, in that quadrant two, we want to delegate or automate those things out as much as possible. And so certainly in the past, delegation is learning how to, as a business owner or a pastor, this, if you don't know how to delegate, it is a fast track to burnout. You cannot do it all, right? This is what the great example for pastors is, as being part of the Shepherd's Crook, is this is what your deacons are for, right? They're to pick up the load and to delegate that out. Now, The other thing in my world, in the tech world, and being a CEO of a tech company, as AI has continued to grow, there's a lot of things that we can do to automate things. Like I automate my calendar and through Calendly and live off my Google Calendar and set up Zoom calls and podcasts. And that all gets kind of automatically put into the calendar. And so I don't have to actually take the time to do that. I've got both programs and softwares and people that can help set up those meetings and set up those calls and do all that kind of stuff. And so I'm going to delegate and automate as much as I can. And that leads me to the place that I think most of us, those of your listeners who are listening right now, as well as people that are running their own business, where they get caught up the most. And it's in the things that are urgent and important. And the things that are urgent and important are the things, again, that have deadlines. It was writing the book. I had deadlines for the book. Writing the book was very important, but I had certain deadlines I had to meet. You know, it's preparing your sermon every week. Like, there's an urgency there because you've got to be ready on Sunday right. to be able to, and it's very important. So it's important and urgent, and it's often the things that only we can do. It can't be delegated. It's a higher order of thinking. And so it's that, you know, it's meeting for discipleship with the guys. It's the prayer breakfast. It's the, you know, preparing for the Lord's Day. It's all of these things that very much are important and also urgent. And I want to be careful the way I say this, because I think in pastoral ministry, you have to be careful applying this specific word that I'm going to use. But in the business world, what I want to do is I want to do that very effectively and efficiently. Now, again, I want to be careful there, because I don't think the goal is to prepare a sermon as efficiently as possible specifically, right? So there's been discussion about this on Twitter this week about like how long does it take you to prepare a sermon. However, what I would argue is that you should not be preparing your sermon in the midst of distraction. You've got to turn off the distractions, the notifications off your phone. You turn off the notifications on your computer. You go to a dedicated workspace. I often practice a concept that I call the Pomodoro, which was a published article written, I think, back in the 80s. You know, my grandma had the little kitchen timer that was shaped like a tomato. So Pomodoro is the Italian word for tomato. You know, you'd turn it at the hemisphere and it would count down, you know, 20 minutes or whatever for how long something was supposed to be in an oven. Of course, now we all have timers on our phones. You can actually use the timer on your phone and still turn your phone on do not disturb mode. So the only thing that goes off is the timer. So then what I do, if I'm doing work, I'm focused on a project that only a CEO can do, or even, you know, I preach on a fair routine schedule at church, I do totally undistracted work. I go into an office where the doors are closed. There's always people in my house and hustle and bustle. And so I'm going into like a room like what you're sitting in right now or what I'm sitting in right now. And it's, I don't do other things in this room other than work. I don't watch TV in here.
Right.
I don't play board games in here. This is my workspace. And so whether that's preparing a sermon or a Sunday school lesson or having, working through the company financials or preparing for the next board meeting for us, like whatever that is, I want to do that as effectively and efficiently as possible. Not so fast that you get sloppy, right? It's both efficient and effective. And so if I prepare a sermon in 35 minutes, I don't know who could do that and do it well, then it's going to be sloppy and it's not going to be professional and it's not going to be, you know, you're not going to give the gravity that the Word of God really deserves. And so I want to do those things, but I want to do them with no distractions. I want to be 100% focused. I don't want my mind to be elsewhere. The other thing I do while I'm doing that is I often have a scrap piece of paper sitting next to me, an actual just scrap piece of typing paper and a pencil. And if something pops up in my head while I'm focused on a specific project that I'm working on, whatever that may be, business, church, whatever, you know, I have to thaw the meat for dinner tonight or whatever, I'll just write thaw meat and I go right back to the thing, because I don't want any of these other thoughts taking up bandwidth in my brain. And this ultimately leads to a focus and an enjoyment of the quadrant four things, which are the things that are the most important things in our life, but are never urgent. These are spiritual disciplines. These are our family worship. This is quality time with our wife and our kids. We don't want to apply efficiency to those things. I don't want to apply the game plan to, which we'll get into, to goals, actions, metrics, and efficiency to date night with my wife. I want to be able to enjoy it. And so that quadrant one, again, unurgent, unimportant, we want to eliminate it.
Mm-hmm.
On quadrant two, the things are urgent but not important, we want to delegate or automate it. On the things that are urgent and important, which for those of us who are hardworking guys, as we're called to work hard by the sweat of our brows, we want to do that in an efficient manner. We want to be as efficient as we can so that we can really enjoy the things that are most important to us. Again,
family,
faith, health, fitness, etc. And so that's really how the book is set up. And then from there, it just dives into the tactical, here's how you do that. And so you look at those places that are the weak link in your chain and places where you think you're probably, you could make a minimum effective dose step mm-hmm. and you could make you could move the needle in the right direction for a good return on investment. And I don't literally mean just financially, like maybe that's gaining time or effort, or again, being able to focus on the things that really matter to you. And you lay out goals to help you get there, the actions that support those goals, the metrics that we use to quantify. And for strength training, that's easy, right? Because we're tracking the weight on the bar, your PRs, your volume, your tonnage, whatever the thing is. It's the same for stuff that we do in business. You're tracking financial metrics or output or whatever the thing is. And then the daily execution task list, the task list that you do daily to actually get the thing done, which helps maintain the consistency. And so, yeah, the book is really set up, like you said, in thirds, where it starts really at this overarching 30,000 foot view. Do you know what your core values are? Do you know what the legacy is that you want to leave? Do you, like, who do you want to be if the Lord gives you the opportunity to be an 80-year-old? You know, I want to be the 80-year-old wise, jacked grandpa who loved people, loved Jesus, served well, those sort of things. It's not that the attainment of the goal is where the joy is. And I think that's really important to hear this. It's the pursuit of the goal for the 60 years before you get there.
Yeah, that's good.
Right? Like, it's the value is in the work itself, is in the pursuit itself. It's not in the congratulations. And this is why I think you can see guys all the time who are so focused on winning the award, winning the Super Bowl, right? We're in playoff season in football right now. Win the Super Bowl. You have guys that really enjoy the process all the way from preseason to the games, to the practice. They love the work. And of course, they're going to enjoy the harvest and reaping the rewards of that work. But you have other people that all they care about is hoisting up that Super Bowl trophy, and anything less is a failure.
Yeah.
And even when they win the Super Bowl, and I would argue, like, Michael Jordan was like this with the championship in basketball.
And you talked about this, the difference between that Mamba mentality with Kobe
that's
and
right.
Jordan. That's right.
That's right. So Kobe, and again, both very flawed individuals. So, you know, wouldn't certainly model my life after either one of them, but Kobe learned that the value was in the work itself.
Yeah.
And he was going to go out and outwork everyone, not out of a sense of, I think, narcissism or pride, but because he just got value out of the work. Now, he won a bunch of championships as well, and I think he enjoyed them when he won them. But the reality was he looked forward to getting back to work after he won the championship, or if he didn't win a championship, getting back to work. I think Michael Jordan, all he cared about was winning the championship. And it made him, you know, he was one of the best basketball, I believe he's the best basketball player who ever lived. But the problem that you see is when you have a guy that all he wants to do is win, then that the happiness, quote unquote happiness that comes from the win is fleeting and doesn't last. And so very shortly after winning the championship, you are now sort of, you've got this hole again in your heart, in your soul, in your brain, and you're just focused on winning the next championship. I think
right.
It's probably why, and I'm not a psychologist, obviously, why he's probably a degenerate gambler. I think he wants to win. I don't think it's, you know, I think it's, he wants to win at all costs. And
mm-hmm.
so when we recognize that there's value in the work itself, then I think that's the piece that we're trying to get to. Of course, we need to have good goals to pursue, but it's not about winning the prize at the end. It's about running the race,
mm-hmm.
right? Like that's
yeah,
the
that's
piece
good.
That people forget that Paul's talking about this. It's like, yeah, it'd be great to be given a prize by Jesus himself when I get to heaven. But the reality is that the prize comes because of the race that you ran. You ran a good race. And that's what we're trying to do in our life.
Yeah. This is incredibly helpful content. It's something that actually reminds me of a book that I've talked about in years past, and I've kind of gone back to multiple times at this point. But it's Pastoral Work by Eugene Peterson. Now, Eugene Peterson is unique. He's kind of like, I guess to a better degree, but he's kind of like Kobe or Jordan when you say that there's some flaws here, and his are more theological. But sure. He's got a lot of practical advice in his pastoral works. And his book, The Contemplative Pastor, talks about the pastor just getting handles on defining what pastoral ministry is from the scriptures, rather than it being handed to you by everybody else who doesn't understand the actual work of a pastor. So they're just giving you everything, and you got all these different things that then you feel like you have to do. And in this book, it reminded me a little bit of what Eugene Peterson was talking about, because it is so easy to get bogged down by everything you feel like you have to do. And what Matt is laying out is just really helpful advice, and just helping you, again, do what you need to do to make sure you're prioritizing the things that you actually prioritize in your life. Because if you don't, you just get caught up and you look back in your life 5 years, 10 years, and you realize, my goodness, I'm not where I wanted to be. I haven't prioritized and done what I wanted to actually do and what I say I valued. And so another piece that I really appreciate about what you've done in this book, and we're going to get to the game plan here in just a second, again, get back to that. But I appreciate, and for those that are watching in video, you're going to be able to see this, but I'm going to put this up. This is just an example here of the Eisenhower matrix, decision matrix. What you do in the book, I think, is so helpful, is you weave in biographical things about your life without being too much of a storyteller, where, you know, it's like 90s books or so many stories where you're like, can you actually get to the content? It's just story after story. You do a great job of stories, but then you also do the biographical stories kind of things, but you also do a really good job. And I don't know who it was that put all the graphics in, but there's examples of this. And I pulled that. That's the decision matrix. And then I see in the game plan, so many pages that are filled with graphics that help you work through. This is actually, it looks like what, you know, Matt has in his, you know, office, where here's a grid.
Yeah, that's exactly that's what we did. Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, so I mean, it looked like this is exactly what you took your team through at Barbell Logic, and here it is, what we're able to see and visualize from, you know, the work that's done with your business and with that model, and even your personal life, and here it is now on paper. And so I love all that, and that brings us, you know, to this game plan. You already mentioned it in passing, but you have goals, actions, metrics, and then the evaluation,
execution.
Yep. And then the last step. So tell us again, you mentioned this, but you got to get some direction here. Then you've gone through the urgent, unimportant. You understand all those matrix from the decisions that the Eisenhower grid. Now we're in the game plan, and then make this concise, because I want to have enough time to go through the part three. So just bring us again, part two.
Yeah. So just very quickly, shout out to illustrator Ted. Ted is the guy that does all of the, he lives in the Netherlands. He does all of the illustrations for Art of Manliness, for Brett McKay and the Art of Manliness. He had done some stuff for us before, and he did such a great job of the illustrations, especially in the first half of the book. And then I use my own graphic design team, and these are exactly what we use at Barbell Logic. And you can actually see sort of the history of how we walk through this and how we learn the game plan and how we put it into practice in the business. And so the game plan is this simple. Once you identify what your major core values are in your life and what you're pursuing, whether that's personal or spiritual or professional or whatever, then you can start to develop goals that you're going to try to reach in a specific finite amount of time. Maybe that's a quarter, maybe it's a year. Like I'm about to meet with my head mission control team next week, and we're going to all they will have is they'll have too many goals. You've got to be able to, and this is back towards the beginning of the book, you've got to learn how to deprioritize and pull weeds. Everybody, if we were like, hey, the perfect me would be, I would get this done and this done and this done, and the next thing you know, you've got 20 goals, and you end up being the jack of all trades, master of none. You accomplish none of the goals. And so instead, what it really forces you to do is hone in on the goals that are going to make the biggest impact. And we want to choose goals that utilize really that minimum effective dose of the assets that we have, which everyone has the same assets. They're just time, effort, and money. And so we all have the same amount of time in a day or in a month, right? We don't know how much time we have in our life, but effort, we can outwork people. And certainly I could argue that when you're in your 20s and 30s, you can probably even work, you know, burn the candle at both ends. Maybe you're not married yet. Maybe you don't have kids. Once you're married and have kids, you know, there's, you have a certain level of effort that you need to be able to give to your family as well. And then you have money, which varies dramatically based on where you're at in life and how the Lord's blessed you and whatnot. And so what we want to do is we want to pick the goals that are going to give us the greatest return on investment for the least amount of asset used. And that takes some time to think through. And then once we come up with, so my, what I argue for is you should really only have about three goals at any given time. Two is fine. Four is okay. I think five's too many to, because you just get too, you're spread too thin. Then you take those goals. Those goals have to be objective, quantifiable, measurable, deadlined. What is the deadline to meet that goal? And then you come up with the, on average, three or four major action items that you can answer yes or no about. If I'm going to do this, then that means I have to accomplish this thing, whatever that thing is, right? And so that at the end of that time period, you can say, did I or did I not do that? It can't be ethereal. It can't be subjective. It's got to be very yes or no answer. If you are able to accomplish the, say, three actions that support the goal, then you should have met the goal if your theory was correct. This is really about applying the scientific method to business and to life and to fitness and things like that. And then we look at, well, then what are the North Star metrics that we're going to use to measure if we're making progress? Which means what will happen is you won't actually get through all of the actions and not meet the goal. You'll understand in the process, you know what, I might need to change an action here because it's not actually leading me to the right place, right? And yeah, again, strength right. training is easy because we're always using PRs and you know, what's your personal best, and not just on the main lifts, but on everything. I mean, what is your 3x8 barbell curl PR? Like things that I wouldn't remember. One of the things I love about our software is it tracks all that for us. And so we identify the most important goals that allow us to move the needle for a return on investment on things that are important to us, not urgent. Sometimes they have some urgency, but they always have importance. If they're not important, they shouldn't be a goal.
Mm-hmm.
The three actions or so that support that goal, the metrics that you're going to use or the milestones that you're going to use to measure if you're actually making progress. And then the last part of the book is really about how we execute that on a daily basis. So now you've got this plan of goals, actions, and metrics, which should all be able to be put on a single piece of paper, even for a business like mine, even for a major multi-million dollar business with many, many, many staff members. We can put our entire game plan on a single sheet of paper. The execution plan then becomes the day-by-day, week-by-week, month-by-month checklist to make sure that I'm doing what I'm supposed to do every single day to make sure I'm moving the ball down the field and getting closer and closer to accomplishing the next action. So that as I accomplish the next action, I get a little closer to accomplishing the next goal. So as I accomplish the goal, I become more in alignment with my core values of who I want to be and who I say I am. And so that's why these goals, actions, and metrics, they often change from season to season. The core values don't. The core values don't change unless you have a major life. You know, if you go from somebody who's, let's say, not a Christian, you get saved and you love the Lord, like your core values are going to change dramatically. But but for somebody who already has a wonderful relationship with the Lord, your core values are going to stay the same, but the goals are going to change from season to season. Again, for some people that might need to be once a quarter. For some, maybe it's once a year. What I don't want to do is I don't want to set a goal that's so far out there that I can't really make quantifiable progress over the course of a year or 2 years. It's just too far away. So I've got to break it up into smaller goals, something that I can hit in the next 3 months or 4 months or a year at the most. And that's how I'm going to focus on that. And then it just comes down to having good people to manage that execution plan of what is essentially just a checklist of important things that we work through, and we really put those in chronological order in that execution. So as we check them off the list, once we get through the execution list, we've accomplished an action. So each one just builds upon the next and supports the next one down the line.
Very good. Very good. Well, I very much enjoyed the book. And I think those that are listening in, if you've enjoyed this content, jump out and go on Amazon or go wherever, Barnes & Noble or wherever you want to get the book and pick it up. It's a phenomenal book. I also have got to see Matt put these kind of things into practice. Now, I'm sure you'd be the first to say that there are things in this book that, just like in anything in life, we know the right thing to do, but at times we're like, oh, why didn't I do that? Drop the ball here. I missed. It's sometimes easier to talk about something than actually do something. And then eventually you get around to building those patterns and doing the right thing. But even in building a schedule and the game plan and all of that, there are some things I'm sure that fall through the cracks. But one of the things I appreciate about you is we're on the river. You've been coming to the river trip the last couple of years now with Brandon, and I appreciate you guys a lot. And we're getting ready to go on the river, and you're like, you know what? I have to actually make a hard decision here. Instead of floating on the river today, I'm going to stay and do some work. We got an internet connection there right in Eminence.
I actually had to preach on Sunday.
Okay.
So I had a sermon I was preparing for, and I said, you know what? I would love to float, but the more important thing is that I prepare my sermon
exactly
for Sunday. And so I stayed in the cabin and prepared my sermon because it was more important.
Yeah. Now, we certainly ragged on you a little bit for that, but
yeah, it was fine.
Yeah, that's all right, because that was the thing that you needed to do. So I was able to see you put these things into practice, because I'm sure at that moment probably would have been more fun to just go and drink some drinks and chill and throw a fishing line out and try to catch a few fish along the river. But you did what you needed to do. And so I love that you live it. I love that there's the proof is in the pudding when it comes to, the compounded, interest of hard work over the years of trying to figure out these systems.
Right.
And then what has become Barbell Logic, you have everything in that whole iceberg scene at the beginning of the book, where like all this behind the scenes that's been at work to play to be where you are that you can't see. And I just appreciate your friendship, your hard work, and then everything that's come from even putting the time into writing this book, because it's so easy to have the ideas and have all this in play at Barbell Logic but not put it down for others to be able to read and benefit from. And you did that hard work as well, so I just want to say I appreciate that and commend you for that work. Is there anything else that you would like people to know about this? A website to go to? Anything else that you do? I know that you got the podcast with Barbell Logic and everything there. And obviously, if people are wanting some strength training and wanting to find out more about that, send them your way.
Yeah, for sure. So first off, I wrote the book. You're exactly right. I wrote the book for me first. I'm the intended audience because I struggle with this stuff. And most of the lessons learned in the book are lessons that have been learned from my failures, not from my success. And so one of the things I get very frustrated about with business books, especially, and this is not a business book, it's a lifestyle book, really. I've had a lot of great feedback from, from stay-at-home moms, soccer moms, business professionals, every between. I still struggle with these things. The life that I've chosen to lead, but a lot of that came out of the failures of my past. And so, and I still struggle sometimes. I've done podcasts over the last few months where I'm like, there's a massive sort of PR thing that you do when you have a big book come out from a major publication like Forbes. And I'm like, I feel like a hypocrite. I'm on here doing this podcast. I'm drowning in urgency, talking about how to not drown in urgency. Yeah, so I'm grateful I'm not drowning today. I feel really good. The Lord has blessed tremendously, but certainly these are lessons that I have to constantly come back to and learn myself. And so I think the book is very applicable to just about anybody, because now when we asked our dad, somebody asked our dad, how's it going? Just the same sort of question we asked today, the answer was always good. And now when you ask almost anybody, how's it going? The answer is busy.
Right.
And so this is to get out of the busy and out of the drowning in urgency and focus on the things that really matter the most to you. And so the only promotion I'll give for the book. So first off, you can find out everything about the book and about me at my personal website, which is RyanMattReynolds.com. I go by Matt. My first name is Ryan Reynolds, famous actor. Right. And so so that's my author title. So RyanMattReynolds.com. There's lots of free content there and stuff you can pick up on. I will say that right now, over the next week or two, depending on when the podcast comes out, the Kindle edition just got put on sale for $1.99 on Amazon. So for $2, you can get the book, which is fantastic. And we've been at the top of the rankings across multiple categories and sort of business and time management and lifestyle. So again, it's been a big blessing to get the word out there and really kind of get this, it was taking up a lot of bandwidth in my brain. And so to get it out there, and I'm very proud of the book that we've written and want to continue to live a life that's in alignment with that. So thank you so much for the opportunity to talk about it. And I think I say this every time I'm on your podcast. Listen, if you guys listen to this podcast and you reach out to me, I'm easy to find. My email is super easy. Search Matt Reynolds, Barbell Logic. Again, that's the company that offers online coaching. If you're interested in that, great. But if you just want to find me, and if you read the book or if you've got questions about the book, you can find my email. Just search, just Google Matt Reynolds Barbell Logic. My email is all over the place. Shoot me an email. Jared certainly knows it as well. And I will personally respond to your email. I'll take the time to do that. This is having a ministry for me in this realm where my worlds have kind of come together of strength training and reform theology and all that sort of stuff. And I get to train a lot of guys like you, has been a real blessing to me. And so I'm very excited to help the type of person who would be your listener on the podcast. So don't hesitate to reach out and say hi. If you buy the book, I would love to have a review, just an honest review on Amazon, because that helps dramatically. But you can find it anywhere where books are sold. They're on all the airport, Hudson News and whatnot, and Barnes & Noble, and anywhere you buy good books.
Okay. Well, my review is going to be coming on Amazon. I just finished it a couple weeks ago and really appreciated it. So it is going to be posted here soon. Guys, we've been talking to Matt Ryan Reynolds.
Right.
And the book is Undoing Urgency, published by Forbes. I'll put those links in the show notes. Matt, thanks so much for coming on the show, brother.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks again for listening to the Shepherd's Crypt podcast. For more information, you can go to theshepherdscrypt.co. Please consider leaving a rating or review on iTunes. And if you want to become a member of the Shepherd's Crypt, please message me and we'll get you on the list. We hope you have a great rest of your day.